A bomb plot prompted the Swiss government to assign Carla Del Ponte around-the-clock bodyguards when, as that country's attorney general, she pursued cases against the Sicilian mafia. Then 10 years ago, she found herself facing new dangers when she became the UN's chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia and investigated acts of genocide in Rwanda. In a new memoir called Madam Prosecutor, Confrontations with Humanity's Worst Criminals and the Culture of Impunity, co-authored with former New York Times reporter Chuck Sudetic, she discusses her career and creates fresh controversy by charging that officials at the UN and NATO failed to properly investigate allegations of Albanian atrocities against Serbs in Kosovo in 1999. It's published by Other Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Chuck Sudetic to our show today. Hello.
It's great to be here again, Leonard. Thank you.
And Newsweek reports that Carla Del Ponte has actually been barred from speaking a word about her own books. Who's prohibiting her from speaking about this?
The gag order on Madame Del Ponte came down last year when the book was originally published in Italian.
So she couldn't speak about it in Italy either?
In fact, they had actually given her permission to go to Italy for the book opening in Milano. And before she left, they put the gag order on and said, no, you can't go. And the reason for it, as far as I've been able to fathom, is that some of the accusations that we reveal in the book about the crimes that were committed against Serbian civilians in Kosovo, and these are serious crimes. We're talking about the kidnappings of 100 to 300 people minimum, and perhaps as many as 400. People with first names and last names where the place where the disappearance is noted and clear record. Mm-hmm.
Nothing ambiguous here.
Nothing ambiguous here. No. It gets a little bit ambiguous when we go on down the trail. Those people were, by best accounts, taken into Albania and killed. And among those, there were accounts that were received by the UN in Kosovo that some had been sucked up into an ongoing organ for money process and actually killed for their organs. And this is a number of about a couple dozen at tops that by best estimates we have. But it's an unproved, this isn't proven yet, but it's an assertion that came from some reliable sources where there was some compelling physical evidence to back it up.
I want to go into more detail on that somewhere down the line, but I'm still not sure. So the UN, even though you have this information and she was working for the UN, it has barred her from...
It's not the UN that's barred her from speaking. It's the government of Switzerland. The book came out...
Because they're afraid that they'll have problems with Albania?
Problems with Kosovo. The book came out almost at the same time that the Kosovar Albanians had declared independence. They made themselves declared themselves an independent state.
And most of the world supported that.
They rushed to recognize about a week or two before this book came out, and when they did, it was like a one of these whoops moments where they said, "Oh, we got a little problem here." That might reflect upon the leaders of that republic. And what's interesting about this is that the information upon which these assertions were based came from Albanians. And information that's been developed since then has come from Albanians, many of them who are concerned that their state is being jeopardized by governmental structures that are essentially a mafia, and don't want to see this happen. And all we put it in for was we knew that these assertions were out there. We knew that there was some compelling physical evidence of it, and we wanted to get an investigation started, and we succeeded in doing it.
Well, you covered the area for the New York Times from 1990 to 1995, but that was before all of these things happened. You're talking about something that occurred in 1999. These people were kidnapped, transported across the international border into Albania, and then killed. And as you say, some of the younger ones also may have had their organs removed as part of some international organ trafficking operation.
Yes, that's what we're saying. We have assertions to
this is horrifying, and you would think somebody out there would be going after the perpetrators.
Exactly, and the information on this came to the tribunal's knowledge and the UN's knowledge. It came to the United Nations mission in Kosovo, which was sort of a kind of UN oversight government in Kosovo before it was recognized as an independent state. They got it first. They brought in the UN tribunal in The Hague, and they went to they had a tip that some of this activity, not all of it, but some of it had taken place in a house. People who were sources actually pinpointed this place. And look, I was a war reporter, and I understand these allegations are always far-fetched, very difficult to believe, and often when you start off reporting something like this, it seems always to be around the next bend. In this instance, the detail became more and more compelling. It led to a house. In the house, they sprayed luminol in a room where this is said to have taken place. It lit up like a light bulb in red. Another room, same thing, lit up. It went outside, looked around, and found gauze, physical evidence that something medical was going on in a country house far, far from the wider world. And it was something that should have been taken up and investigated, and it wasn't.
Well, Human Rights Watch has issued a report that corroborates all of this. But
it corroborates the assertions. It's not proof that what the sources said happened yet. But the point was nobody investigated it. The UN tribunal under Carla's watch couldn't investigate it because they had a jurisdictional limitation on what they could take up. There was 2 points. It was a crime in Albania, which you might have been able to work your way around that. But secondly, the crimes asserted, the kidnappings themselves, took place after the armed conflict had ended, the definition of the armed conflict. And that's only when you have crimes committed during an armed conflict does that tribunal have jurisdiction. And the third reason was there was limited budget and a limited amount of time to bring a case, and this was one thing they didn't want to run with, especially when someone else could have done a criminal investigation and should have.
My guest is Charles Sudetic, who has written in collaboration, well, Carla Del Ponte wrote her book in collaboration with Chuck, called Madam Prosecutor, Confrontations with Humanity's Worst Criminals and the Culture of Impunity. It's published by Other Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, the people who probably should prosecute are the Albanians.
Precisely.
Have they responded at all to these accusations?
The Albanians had a representative there when the trip was made to the house where this physical evidence showed up. And one of the quotations that he was recorded as having said was, look, there are no Serbs here. They hadn't gone to a graveyard. They were just looking at this house. And he said, but no Serbs here. But if Serbs were brought across the border and killed, then that's okay. That was the attitude of a prosecuting authority in the Republic of Albania. So there wasn't going to be any voluntary effort on their part because at that time they only saw themselves as victims of the 98-99 conflict in Kosovo and didn't want to take a good hard look at their own behavior, as every nation does, from the United States to Serbia to Bosnia, Croatia, Cambodia. When the spotlight gets pointed at them in the realm of war crimes, everybody's very, very careful. And the second thing was the UN in Kosovo didn't take it up. So it's not just a state. It's this parastate operation that didn't take it up.
But now we have the Council of Europe. It's reported that Dick Marty of the Council of Europe, whose last investigation exposed the CIA's secret network of prisons involved in extraordinary renditions, has taken on this case. Do you think that's going to go anywhere?
Yes, I think it's going to go somewhere because since this book came out, since this effort to begin to prompt some kind of investigation of these kidnappings came out, there has been... We figured that if we got it started, information would come out, and it's begun to spill. And I think Dick Marty's going to get the the critical mass necessary to his job is to write a report. It's not to do a prosecution. It's not a criminal investigation. But what I think is going to happen is that the critical mass of this information is going to come out. It's sort of hemorrhaging now, and it's going to be imperative upon either the local authorities in Kosovo or the international community in their capacity in Kosovo to see to it that a credible criminal investigation is finally carried out.
Well, throughout the book, Madame Del Ponte talks about a bureaucratic wall of rubber, or muro di goma.
Muro di goma. That's right.
And that's what we're talking about here. But I would think that this climate of complacency in which politics trumps the pursuit of justice would be finally disappear, especially with the Swiss government. Why is the Swiss government maintaining this hard line? I mean, I can't imagine that Ms. Del Ponte had any idea before she took the job as ambassador, Swiss ambassador to Argentina, that she might be prohibited from doing a promotional tour for this book.
She certainly did not. She did not anticipate that. Why the government would want to do this, you know, I'm just Chuck from the United States. I'm from the west side of Cleveland. I'm not from Switzerland. But my guess is they jumped to recognize, as everybody else did, they were worried about a political ramifications because of that decision internally, the government of Switzerland, the foreign ministry.
Yeah, but it's years later now.
It's years – well, no. At the time, remember, this was raising allegations that were quite inflammatory. I mean, this the act that we are describing, kidnapping 400 people, that's bad enough. Taking them across an international border against their will, that's pretty bad as well. But then laying on this business about the possibility that some were actually sold for their physical organs, that's pretty inflammatory.
10 years ago.
Right. But the announcement came a week within the announcement that Switzerland was going to recognize Kosovo as an independent state, and they were sending an ambassador in there. And I think they were worried about some kind of ramifications there, and there might also be some kind of personal thing going on inside. It's Switzerland. You know, Carla Del Ponte is a superstar in Switzerland. She speaks out in a country where bank secrecy and taking good care about what your neighbors think is sort of the rule of the game. And she's been speaking out ever since her days back chasing the mafia and also working for the elimination of a lot of that bank secrecy that was facilitating the work of criminal gangs around the world.
And we just recently the Swiss have given in a little bit and started revealing about some people who've been using Swiss banks as tax havens.
Exactly.
A spokesman for the Swiss embassy in Washington told Newsweek that for Ms. Del Ponte to express herself, that's in quotes, on any previous activity would be incompatible with her present function. So does that mean that she's banned from not just speaking about the book, but also about anything that's happened in her previous career?
As far as my understanding of it is, that's correct. We're on a book tour now. I get to be speaking for Carla Del Ponte on this book tour. And I wanted her to come along and just sit there. Say nothing. Mm-hmm. Just be present.
Just have the camera.
Not a camera. We're going to have roundtables and things like that. Just be present for these things physically, but not say anything, not speak, and that wasn't forbidden.
That was forbidden.
Yes,
too.
She was not given permission to do that
because that would have been seen as giving her imprimatur.
Yes, I guess.
I guess is the way you pronounce that word. To this whole thing, but her name is still on the cover of the book.
Her name is on the cover of the book. The book was written we did this book on the basis of, it's very detailed, the book. One of the things, when I first got involved in it, I said, I'm only going to get involved in it for two different reasons. One, you got to be candid with me. You can't sit here and it can't be an act of self-hagiography. Number one, I won't write that kind of book. And number two, it has to be serious. We have to actually say something in this book. And what I wanted to do with her was sort of create an unprecedented look at an unprecedented tribunal. This is something that has never happened before. It's analogous but very different from, say, Kyoto or Tokyo and Nuremberg after the Second World War for many reasons. And the world has never really seen from the inside out how this actually works, what powers Del Ponte had as a prosecutor at these tribunals, what difficulties she had and what tools she had to achieve her goals of gathering the evidence that needed to be gathered to prosecute high-end accused, to actually have those people arrested. And then finally, the third one, she had very few powers. We've taken a lot of criticism in criticism of the book that she was lax somehow in protecting witnesses. Well, it's the same problem. She didn't have the authority or the powers that the Bronx DA has to protect witnesses. It's a much, much different world in the world of international justice.
Well, there seem to be two big themes in this book. Neither has a simple resolution. One is that a war crimes tribunal cannot simply pursue victors' justice, and the other is about political expediency, the tension between being politically prudent and pursuing unspeakable crimes. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about those and other matters. My guest is Chuck Sudetic, who has written in collaboration with Carla Del Ponte, Madam Prosecutor, Confrontation with Humanity's Worst Criminals and the Culture of Impunity. It is published by Other Press. He is also the author of Blood and Vengeance, and his articles have appeared in The Economist, The Atlantic Monthly, Rolling Stone, Mother Jones. He is now a senior writer for the Open Society Institute of the Soros Foundation. Stay with us for more. We're talking about Madam Prosecutor, Confrontations with Humanity's Worst Criminals and the Culture of Impunity by Carla Del Ponte in collaboration with Chuck Sudetic. And Chuck Sudetic is here because Carla Del Ponte is not allowed to be here either alone or with him. The book, by the way, is published by Other Press. When we went into that break, I mentioned the two big themes. Let's talk first about the theme that war crimes tribunals cannot simply pursue victors' justice. She didn't go after the victor and the vanquished, right? Two examples. When she was assigned to investigate Rwanda's victorious Tutsi-led militiamen, she also pursued the Hutu genocidaires, and both efforts failed.
She was tasked in her mandate to pursue the highest-ranking individuals on all sides against which there was significant evidence that they had participated in criminal activity, war crimes activity.
In the case of Rwanda most of the crimes were perpetuated by the Hutu radicals, but Hutus on
Tutsis. Exactly.
But the Tutsis had also done awful things.
Exactly. And one of the things she tried to do once she had established a kind of bona fides with the Tutsi government of Paul Kagame was to go after the members of Kagame's militia who had carried out atrocities against the Hutu population both in the time parallel to the genocide and then afterwards. The problem was that she could get no cooperation from the Kagame government on this because, once again, the focus was pointed at them. They were willing to give significant cooperation to go and chase Hutus. And remember, her job is to get the high-ranking guys, and they've been quite successful at getting them. They just sentenced one of the chief instigators of the Rwanda genocide not long ago down in Arusha. When Del Ponte came out with a credible effort to gather evidence on some Tutsis for specific incidents, the Rwandan government went on a diplomatic offensive to have Del Ponte removed from office. Now, the crime she was going after, you have to let's explain what this is. This was the capture and I don't want to say incarceration because it was just for a few days, of a number of Catholic clergymen, including a couple of bishops, who were taken by Kagame's militia, held, and only after a period of days were they finally executed. Now, that's not a crime of passion. This is something that could have seriously involved premeditated action.
Isn't there a problem in cases like the Rwandan genocide and also the situation in Bosnia where we tend to see good guys and bad guys and the real situation gets a lot more complicated?
Leonard,
the same sort of thing is happening in Congo right now.
You got it, Leonard. You're a book guy. You understand mythology. And people work in their minds. They simplify the world on the basis of stereotypes and myths, good guys, bad guys. One of the reasons I think there was no big investigation of Serb victims in Kosovo was because the Serbs at that time, after all of the problems caused in Croatia and in Bosnia and Herzegovina and finally Kosovo, they weren't exactly the flavor of the month.
But right now I just was reading about crimes against Serbs in Bosnia. Now, most of the crimes were the other way around, but they just turned up a mass grave of Serbs who'd been killed in Bosnia as well. I mean, at times of madness, all sides go crazy.
It's the world of the Balkans is a world of blood vengeance and a world where the leaders of those – it's one of the reasons it's so important to go after the leaders and to destroy the culture of impunity is they're the ones that whip it up, and they whipped up the fear and the hatred of those people where they would go out and do anything to protect themselves and use great violence to do so.
So is the real message of this book that there are serious limits to the current war crimes tribunals? In your estimation, what needs to happen in order for real justice to be pursued?
The book, in its best, is the most concrete description of where the limitations you just spoke of actually exist. How much power and effectiveness does a prosecutor have to gather the evidence needed to get the arrest? Now, remember, in Croatia, we had the government, this is the Muro di Goma in action, where the high-ranking guys in the government would say, oh, yes, we support you, Madame Del Ponte. We think you're wonderful. You're doing good things for the world. But then down below, their secret police operation was hiding evidence. It was giving false identifications and money to people who were on the run from the tribunal. And in, I don't know about the situation in Croatia, but in other jurisdictions, for example, in Kosovo, where there were some Albanians that were brought up on charges, there were was utter use of the official organs to and this mafia kind of structure to intimidate witnesses to the point where they wouldn't come and testify, which weakened cases terrifically.
Well, isn't part of the problem just the way the UN functions? Because when I've asked people about how the genocide in Rwanda could have occurred in the first place, 800,000 Tutsis and Hutu moderates killed, the answer always was, well, this country, France or Belgium or whatever, intervened and prevented any real action from occurring. And I know that one of the other themes here is about political expediency. Ms. Del Ponte was told again and again that she should rein in some of her indictments, again because of political pressures from various members of the UN?
Exactly. Well, the best example of reining in an investigation was looking at crimes that may or may not have been committed by NATO at the time of the NATO bombing of Kosovo in 1999. And basically, she very clearly in the book describes exactly how this worked out. And it came down to the point was to the point where Del Ponte had to make a decision. Either you're gonna try to fight a quixotic victory, you're gonna go chasing windmills, or you're gonna wrap it up and hope maybe you can get some evidence later on and go on and have a war crimes tribunal. Because when she went and started to raise this issue in NATO, all of a sudden the Pentagon refused to cooperate with her completely on getting evidence, protection of witnesses, and this was at a time when NATO was basically the most important asset in Bosnia for the tribunal to support its activity.
My guest is Chuck Sutetic, who collaborated in the writing of Madam Prosecutor, Confrontations with Humanity's Worst Criminals and the Culture of Impunity by Carla Del Ponte, published by Other Press. Well, even when she had a strong case, weren't there problems? For example, the case against Slobodan Milosevic, which dragged on for how many years? 5 years? He was in custody for 5 years. And many people see it as a symbol of the tribunal's inability to finish its task.
Well, but there are many very – but the devil is in the details. And the detail in the Milosevic case was the prosecution wanted time and again for there to be named a credible defense counsel for Milosevic that could provide him with an actual legal defense. Milosevic didn't want to have anybody speaking for him. He wasn't particularly interested in a legal defense, in my opinion, because he knew he was guilty. He knew what he had done, and he knew there was enough of a trail of evidence out there, and the tribunal was going to run into it sooner or later. The reason it didn't have it at the get-go of the trial was because, in this instance, getting the evidence depends upon the voluntary cooperation of the state that Milosevic was running. And even after he was dropped out, there was still a bureaucratic imperative there that wouldn't allow some of that evidence to come through.
It would have been unpopular in Serbia if the Serbian government had cooperated as she would have liked.
Precisely, which is why Milosevic was speaking out the window. His defense was a political defense. It was a political effort to charge up the people in Serbia to try to escape justice in that way. That's my take on it.
But wasn't there also a problem in her decision to broaden the charges against Milosevic to include genocide?
It comes down to a question of credibility.
Critics have said that slowed down the trial further.
It may have slowed it down, but not nearly as much as the antics of Milosevic in presenting his own defense and the leniency of the judges in letting him get away with it. They could have clamped down on it at any time and chose not to. It's been a problem. The problem of defendants defending themselves. We look upon it as a kind of sacrosanct right in the United States to defend yourself. But other jurisdictions, including Del Ponte's, don't look upon it at all. They want to see a credible defense, legal, professional defense presented, and they can actually order it. And there's great acrimony there in the tribunal about how far this should be gone. And Milosevic's case dragged on and on and on because of his dragging it out with these political speech makings and witnesses that led nowhere,
and then he
died. Political defense. And then he died before his time, right?
One can only guess whether it actually would have come to some kind of conclusion. What about her efforts to investigate and prosecute the killers in Rwanda? Did she get any convictions there?
Yeah, they got some convictions in the time she spent. She was only the she was only the prosecutor for Rwanda for 4 years before her efforts to go for the Tutsis got her removed. It was U.S. Great Britain that went to the Security Council and had her removed from that position. The book describes it in detail. Why this was done. It was to protect Kagame and the Tutsis, and I don't exactly understand why. I mean, the Rwanda conflict spilled into Congo, and we've had 3.1 million die there since. But no, there's been some significant convictions and sentences given to the high-end leadership of the Rwanda genocide. The great logjam is with the lower down, the guys who are being tried in local courts in Rwanda. There's thousands of them there who may not be tried for the next 100 years. It's taken so long to get through it. That's victor's justice. Del Ponte was, like I said, into something completely different.
Well, she seems to be totally intrepid. She kept on putting her life in danger when she was the prosecutor against the Sicilian mafia. Her life was threatened many times. Was she ever threatened when she was working in The Hague?
I'm sure she received threats in The Hague. There was mostly ugly moments of style, where you drive down the road into Belgrade and every billboard has Del Ponte's a whore on it, and letters written on official stationery by members of the Serbian government, not addressed to the Madam Prosecutor Del Ponte, but the whore Del Ponte on official stationery. She was intrepid. This is a woman that hunted snakes in the mountains of Switzerland as a kid. And
She should have hunted a few in the capital.
Yeah,
obviously.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, two of her closest associates were murdered. Giovanni Falcone, many people will remember him, the anti-mafia judge. But also Zoran Zinjic, the Serbian prime minister who sent Slobodan Milosevic to The Hague.
Exactly. Zinjic was... If there was one great hero for international justice in Serbia, it was Zoran Zinjic.
Do we know who killed him?
Well, he was killed by members of the secret police operation that Milosevic had run that was effectively the shock troops in the effort to take over territory and ethnically cleanse Croatia and Bosnia, as well as Kosovo.
Now, right now, Carla Del Ponte is forced to sit silent at her diplomatic outpost in Buenos Aires. If she is so outraged by all of this, why wouldn't she quit that job and not work for the Swiss government and speak out against the things that she is most upset about? After all, her not promoting this book, as I understand it, has hurt sales. I don't know whether it hurt sales in Italy, but I've heard that it has played a role in sales.
Yeah, you know, I'm the guy who writes the book. I'm not the guy who does the bean counting at the end of the day, except I feel it. You know, I feel it at the end of the day. Trust me there. But all I can say is Del Ponte has tried time and again to convince her government to let her speak, and there have been signs that this may be lifted sooner or later. All I can do is stress the fact that this still continues, and it's to me irrational. I mean, we're a year into this thing, and I don't think the Swiss government has any great danger, you know, from a Kosovo to itself. I don't understand it.
Well, can this situation ever be corrected, considering the way the UN is structured and the fact that some of the people who reigned Carla Del Ponte in are among the most powerful countries in the UN?
This is where you get into the realm of international justice and how far you remember, international justice is sort of looking in the face of national sovereignty and challenging it. And the question is how far the member states, particularly of the UN Security Council, want to go in allowing an independent tribunal to have competencies that affect its sovereignty. These are things that states are very, very sensitive about. And in the Yugoslavia case...
Well, we set these things up to redress the problems of the past, and then we do everything to cut off the legs of the people who are supposed to do the
job. Exactly. This was the cognitive dissonance that was built into the system. The Yugoslavia tribunal was created not because there was this overwhelming rush in the State Department and in the Foreign Office in Great Britain and other foreign ministries of the Security Council states to go forth with international justice. It was because there was an offensive going on against Srebrenica that they didn't want to intervene in militarily to stop. And instead of taking military action, they decided to do two things: create a safe area out of Srebrenica, which eventually fell apart and there were 8,000 people executed, and create a war crimes tribunal, which in the end tried the people who were responsible for it.
Chuck Sudetic will be discussing this book, Madam Prosecutor, this Thursday the 5th at 6 o'clock at the Open Society Institute. That's at 400 West 59th Street. To RSVP, go to our show page at WNYC.org. The book is published by Other Press, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a great pleasure, Leonard. Thank you again.